The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Care and protection for the whole family's health at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
Good morning, how are you? You're very welcome to the show. And as we heard in the ad there, think safe, think outdoors. And on the front of the mail, Tony Holland is saying this summer must be outdoors. So I'd say he's pleased with how things are going so far this weekend, because it's certainly an outdoor summer out there. I was saying yesterday the videos would start again, and sure enough, overnight we've videos from Salt Hill, which a lot of you will have seen, and there are reports from all the cities around the country: Dublin City Centre, Limerick, Cork, and lots of people keeping it safe and keeping it outdoors. John Lee here reporting that Chief Medical Officer Tony Holohan has poured cold water on the government's plans for a complete return to normality this summer. And I suppose we all suspected a little bit that when Dr. Holohan came back, he might put the foot down, but he seemed quite, he was upbeat, you'd have to say, on Thursday. But anyway, we'll see how all that pans out over the next few days. We'll come back to that in a minute. There's interesting stuff inside about conflict points between government and the health experts is likely to be what they're calling the BBQ ban. So we'll come back to that in a sec. The Business Post saying on their front page, outdoor dining and intercounty travel to return in June and July. And indoor dining and hotels. Yeah, so outdoor dining, beer gardens in June, with intercounty travel, indoor dining and hotels in July. So that means that in June I will be able to go to a beer garden, but I will not be able to travel to Cork to see my two fully vaccinated parents that I haven't seen for months. But I suppose that's the way it goes. The Business Post also saying Davy boasts of 70 million in profits as potential buyer's circle. So Davy made 70 million last year, and they're extrapolating from that the way the bonus structure works in there, employees at the firm potentially shared more than 25 million in bonuses last year. Davies normally wouldn't be giving out that kind of information to mere mortals, but because they're selling the firm, I think they kind of have to. The Sunday Independent, cabinet to end sale of cheap alcohol. So the government is keen to introduce minimum pricing on alcohol within weeks. So that'll impact on some people's outdoor summer as well. The Sunday Times, I think we tend to stick our fingers in our ears and sing la 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 when we kind of hear these numbers. But the Sunday Times is basically saying that the state's reserves are spent as COVID bill tops 12 billion. So my understanding of what they're saying here is that even the extra billions and billions and billions that we had allowed for COVID, we're running out of those as well. And I just think like the Department of Social Protection's overspend is at least 4.2 billion figures that at any other time would have had us in shock. But I guess, you know, we've become kind of immune to it all. And I think they're, people do agree that you just have to keep spending out of this to hold society together and keep things there for when we need them, when it comes back. And they also, India brace for 500,000 infections a day. That's the modelling for India in the next week or so, I think. The Sunday Mirror has Euro Millions winner Dolores McNamara burying her husband. And the Irish Sun on Sunday, if you get to see it, has a very... I won't call it funny, because it's not funny, because it's a drug dealer, but it's a drug dealer who went around calling himself Conor and seems to have been kind of pretending to be Conor McGregor. And there's a picture of him and a picture of Conor McGregor. And he does look like Conor McGregor after a few hard nights out, I think. And the Sunday World, Monk had cryptic Kinahan kill list. Gardaí believed that the Monk was linking the cartel to 30 gangland murders. Sources say the Hutch mob is now a major criminal force in Europe. I suppose we kind of started thinking of the Hutch mob as almost being victims in all this, but let's not forget that they are a major criminal force themselves. Now, our panel this morning, Eddie Shanahan is a fashion retail consultant. Professor Cliona Ní Chealaig is a consultant in infectious diseases in St James's Hospital in Dublin. And Gráinne Ní Fhé, joining us remotely, is a journalist with thejournal.ie. Good morning. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
So why don't we start with that, the front of the Irish Mail on Sunday, Holohan this summer must be outdoors. Cliona, they've identified here two areas in particular that could result in a wave of new infections: family get-togethers and gardens, and hospitality, right? And what they're saying, and a member of NPHET here is saying, we do not have a barbecue climate. Families can meet in gardens, have a barbecue. Then it rains and they all run into the house. Or at 8 p.m. it gets cold and they go inside, or they're going in and out to the loo. Cabinet minister is expected to oppose this BBQ ban. Would people at this point not be better off being able to stay in their gardens with a handpicked group of people rather than being out thronging on beaches, parks, everywhere else surrounded by other people?
So first of all, I don't even think the beaches are that bad, because there's a good stiff sea breeze there in Galway that will whip virus away. So in terms of danger, that's not the worst.
Let's start with that then. So those pictures we saw from Salt Hill, you're not as outraged as some people
are. I'm not as outraged. I mean, I understand people are outraged because they see people breaking the rules. But, you know, COVID is airborne. The air, we all know, we've all felt that sea breeze chap our cheeks, and, you know, it'll have been blown virus away very quickly. So I think if we think about kind of the concept of harm reduction, which is something we use a lot in medicine, we'd use it with people who use drugs, we'd use it in sexual health. You know, people are going to do things that aren't what somebody might recommend. But how can you do it in the safest way possible? So, yeah, if you're going to have a group of young people together, a beach is not a bad place. If you're going to meet your family, your own garden is not a bad place either. You know, I do think that people are pretty sensible. You know, you can wear your mask when you go into the loo break, have your mask in your pocket. If it, you know, starts to lash rain, head home rather than heading inside. Take your stuff with you. I think we really need to prioritise what can be done outdoors, because people, you know, people need to see their families and their friends.
Okay, so what would you like to see happening, and what do you think could happen for us safely over the next few weeks?
So I think meeting outdoors, I mean, it's great to see so many people using our lovely outdoor spaces. I went for a swim this morning. That was fantastic. You know, all that kind of outdoor activity is just brilliant. And I think meeting in gardens, you know, or having picnics in the park or whatever, those type of ways of meeting people are much safer than in the home. Mm-hmm. So I think those things are things that we really
should
be looking at.
Would you have outdoor dining?
I was just thinking about that. I think it's probably not a bad idea. So I think outdoor dining, especially if the tables are placed and you manage, you know, you have to wear a mask if you go in to use the loo, or if you go in to order, I think is not an unsafe thing to do. I really think there's very few cases of transmission outdoors. Outdoors is, you know, 20 to 100 times safer than anything indoors. I think indoor dining is very difficult to see happening again. And I was reading, you know, Anthony Fauci, that cool guy in the US, he's fully vaccinated, and he was talking about what he will do and what he won't do. So he will meet small numbers of close friends. He won't go to a restaurant indoors.
Okay, texter here saying, so I'm stuck in Kilkenny until next July. Kilkenny's a small inland county, no coast, no way, good luck with that. I've done my part. It's time to acknowledge our mental health and well-being. Inter-county travel, is inter-county travel causing the spread of COVID-19, or would it?
So I have to confess a conflict of interest. We bought a cottage in Wexford. We got the keys on the 1st of March 2020. So I am longing to get down there. I think inter-county travel, so long as you're doing it safely, should be allowed. You know, I think if it's more about what you're doing than where you're doing it. Now, that said, I'm coming from Dublin, going to somewhere where there's less risk of COVID. They might not be as happy to, you know, Cork may not be as happy to see you coming as you would be to go to Cork. But I do think that certainly the 5 kilometre limit and inter-county travel are things that we could probably think about lifting sooner rather than later. I mean, we've lifted the 5K now, but maybe not doing that again. I do think, I know myself, you know, I was even eyeing up the Liffey, thinking of getting in for a swim at one point because I missed the sea. It's more than my 5K.
You'd run out of a shower lined up after that.
Yeah, you would. Yeah, it didn't look very appealing.
Bring your hand sanitizer, I'd say. Okay, before I let you off now, right, and I'll go to the others. Someone texting and saying, your guest is very wrong. The video I saw from Salt Hill was people screaming into each other's faces. Is that?
Yeah, screaming outdoors is still infinitely better than screaming indoors. And they were close together and they were screaming. So you could think, okay, you know, maybe the 5 people around them or the 10 people closest to them would be exposed. But it's not the same as in a room indoors where it's going to be hanging around, you know, for hours and hours and hours. So I still think if you're going to have a rave, have it on a beach.
Okay. Gráinne Nié, you are the closest thing I have to hand now to a young person. What are your thoughts on the generality of the outdoor summer and what Tony Holohan is said to have said at an NPHET meeting, and then the scenes we've been seeing over the weekend?
Yeah, I'm thinking back to St. Patrick's Day and Easter when the weather was brilliant and people went outside and people saw young people along the canal in Dublin, the Grand Canal there, and they were lined there in the evening. And sometimes after, in an evening after work, you'd see a lot of young people gathered there as well. And I've seen a few kind of wringing of hand kind of messages and tweets saying this isn't good, but we haven't seen a spike after that, you know. And Neffet have said,
there
was no spike after St. Patrick's Day or Easter because people, even though that technically isn't allowed, it is still in the spirit of the rules that the public health officials have been telling us, that people are meeting up in small enough groups and outside, and you know that is kind of young people trying to do their best, even though they may not feel they're at too much risk of COVID, that they are doing their bit to try and meet up and socialise safely. So I do think, you know, we're obviously going to get these flare-ups of incidents where people don't adhere to the restrictions across all age groups. And, you know, a point that we made, we were talking about this time last year about young people, is they're more likely to be filmed. They're more likely to be filmed breaking the restrictions. They're more likely to be socialising at that age with large groups of people. So they look quite dramatic, but you have to remember that the vast majority are doing their utter best. And I think that messaging sometimes gets lost because that's not as dramatic a scene as the one in Salt Hill yesterday.
I see your point. And just specifically on what you were saying about Neffet there, and I think it's important to mark these things that they're said. Philip Nolan very specifically said, because people went outdoors to parks and everything, that it was keeping the numbers down. And he is the numbers guy and he's the modeler and everything else. So he was very, very clear on that. Eddie Shanahan, your thoughts on the front page of the Mail and the opening up plans?
Well, I think generally here, Brendan, the problem is two or threefold. It's the contradictions and the communications for me. You know, we've heard both of my colleagues here talk about, you know, being able to socialise out of doors. But then there's the garden issue, which seems to be contradictory. There's the communication. We have, on the one hand, Dr. Holohan issuing a warning to be calm, that certain things can happen but other things can't. And we've had a parade of ministers over the last week promising us the new utopia in the coming weeks. And I think that's an important issue. And so too is the issue of
I suppose that they get, wherever they go, they get asked. And people do want to know. People have a ferocious appetite for it. So any minister who's out anywhere, he's asked all the time, or he or she asked all the time. And they clearly feel have to give an answer.
No, but to be fair, I did hear Norma Foley one day being asked a question, and she very cleverly said, "I'm not the Minister for Health. That's a question for the Minister for Health." But it seems everybody in government is the Minister for Health these days, or is taking on part of that portfolio. Now, there is also, and maybe I disagree with my colleagues here, the issue of enforcement. And I'm not just talking about people on beaches, but in essential retailing, in the building trade, business in many cases has carried on without interruption. And the people who suffer are the people who are obeying the rules.
So, yeah, is there a sense out there? And I don't think the reaction to Salt Hill was probably what it would have been a few months ago, right? I think a lot of people can kind of understand it. But is there a sense still, though, that some people feel like mugs a lot of the time?
Absolutely. I'm one of them.
Yeah, really.
You know, and I'm sure all of us on this session today are feeling the same, you know, that we've stuck with it. It hasn't been easy. And here we are looking at others breaking the rules, disregarding them with impunity.
Cliona, would you agree with Eddie's point about the mixed messaging and stuff? Colin McCarthy is making the point in the Sunday Independent today on the garden things, the so-called BBQ ban, that on one hand, we're being told we're amazing at compliance. The way the Irish have to be the best at everything. We're the best little country in the world for compliance, right? But on the other hand, we don't trust people to get together in their gardens because they're all going to decamp inside. And that if people understand the thing clearly, why they will keep with it, but that increasingly are people starting to feel it's inconsistent and stuff?
I think so. And I think then that's really challenging when you're trying to stick to things that are painful, like not seeing your parents or, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Or not getting to your cottage in
Wexford.
Or not
getting to my cottage in Wexford. I just have a little cry.
The
here.
Nation is weeping for you. Yeah.
Thank you, Nation. Yeah, I think it is. And I think you have to trust people. You know, in general, people are pretty sensible. So if you can explain the scientific principles that outdoors, virus being blown away, like somebody having a cigarette outdoors, is not going to bother you too much. Somebody has a cigarette indoors, you're breathing in their smoke, it's not pleasant. And if we can really be consistent about what the science is and what the basic mechanisms are, yeah, and then, you know, and then trust people. I think that's the best way to go.
Is it a problem to go, if you have people in the garden and you say, if you have one other household, say, in the garden, right, and you say, you have a downstairs toilet and an upstairs toilet, and you say, we're not going to go near that downstairs toilet for 24 hours before those people come and we're going to give it a good clean down. They use the downstairs toilet, we'll use the upstairs, and everybody be cognizant of washing their hands and maybe, you know, put wipes in there and stuff like that. And then we leave it alone for 24 hours after you're gone.
I think that sounds brilliant. You could even, you know, if you've got a window in your downstairs toilet, you could crack that open. It's really all about the air being breathed in and out. So I wouldn't even go mad on the surfaces. I mean, you probably want to have the downstairs toilet nice before your guests come in anyway. But, you know, have them wear masks going in so that they're not putting their air with COVID in it, if they have COVID unbeknownst to themselves into it. It's not unreasonable
so
at all.
Are you saying, Cliona, that are we being overly restrictive and general on everything just because that's an abundance of caution again kind of thing, but that actually we could be a bit more proactive about telling people how they could live their lives a little bit?
I think we could pause and I think we could say, right, we know now what we didn't know a year ago. We know COVID is airborne. We know most of the transmission is this breathing in and out of air. Can we sit down and look again at what we're going to prioritise in terms of things that we can't do? Like, you know, unfortunately, indoor dining, indoor pubs, you can't wear a mask and eat or drink. You're going to be breathing the same air. That's a problem and we can't do that. But we could do all these other things. Yeah, I think it's not a bad idea at all. Now, I understand it's very difficult for NPHET and for the guys coming up with the public health guidelines to come up with something that is doable, will work, that everybody can stick to. But it is important to be practical.
Yeah. Grainne, would you agree with Eddie that in terms of if there's people feeling like mugs, and I know Pete Lund makes this point that, you know, well, non-compliance is much more visible. And obviously it is this weekend again, very visible. But are people starting to kind of tending to make their own rules, do you think, at this stage?
Yeah, I think people have, for the second half of the pandemic at least, and when there hasn't been a huge spike in cases. So in January and February, everyone was very, you know, scared of getting COVID or passing it on to someone who would get very ill from it. But when the cases are low, people try to do what they want to do, which is seeing family and friends, which is not a bad thing, let's remember, in a safe way. So they might be meeting now in gardens and doing it in a safe way, like Cliona said there about having the window open in a second bathroom and being very strict about that. And I understand there is an inherent unfairness about the pandemic that's just been there from all the way through. You know, the bars and restaurants have been saying repeatedly, this is, you know, we're being targeted here. This is really unfair. And it is just unfortunate that those industries are one of the ones that are heavily impacted by COVID restrictions that are needed to keep people safe. It is not a set of rules that we like, but those are the ones that the virus has kind of dealt society that we have to work around. On the public being trusted mentioned there, I think that's a really important point. Give people information about how the virus is spreading and they will see what the experts see and they will work around that. That's something Philip Nolan said at the NPHET briefing today, that he's been really struck by how powerful it is to just put in front of people, here's how the disease is working or where it is or how it's spreading. Yeah. And people alter their behaviour because they understand the kind of principles that NPHET are looking at.
And nobody wants to get it, young or old, I don't think. You know, I think everyone's agreed on that.
No, and as a young person, you really do not want to be giving it to someone old who will get either very sick and end up in hospital or die from it. That, you know, there is a huge guilt associated with giving someone COVID as well. That kind of people don't want to be getting it. It's a big reason why people don't want to get it.
Now, listen, on the other side of the Salt Hill, thing. There's a text here from an ICU nurse in Galway who drove through Salt Hill yesterday. She said, horrified by the scenes through Salt Hill, huge queues for two toilets. And look, there's a whole other shooting match there. Public drinking, large crowds, littering everywhere. I and my colleagues have had the worst year in ICU. I want an enjoyable summer, but yesterday's scenes in Salt Hill sickened me, and I dread the hospital admissions, the suffering, the pain and the deaths. And you can totally understand where that person is coming from and what she has seen and lived through for the last year. Interesting, though, she mentions about public drinking. We seem to have unofficially made an agreement in the country at this stage that public drinking is fine, that public drinking is where it's at, because the guards are not shutting down the outdoor pint situation. And I think in general, a lot of people would think that it is working in a reasonably civilised manner. Now, going back to Salt Hill, I spoke to JP McMahon, who's, is a well-known Galway restaurateur. I spoke to him earlier because JP right now is teaching 60 kids how to cook, and we did not want to interrupt that. So I had a chat with him earlier about his views on Salt Hill. Here he is. JP McMahon, did you witness these scenes on Salt Hill Beach yourself?
Yeah, no, it was when I suppose it was gathering momentum when I was on the way home. But then I suppose I saw I got a few videos from people who as it kind of developed, I suppose.
And what's your reaction to it?
I feel annoyed because the Garda are located across the road, and we can't even have a few people outside on a table and a chair. At the same time, understand people are frustrated. I've never seen so many people on the beach in my life. So I presume that's because there's nowhere else to go. So to a certain degree, I can't blame people because there is nowhere to go. But I think that this demonstrates that we really need to assess our outdoor dining policy. We can regulated spaces, a few tables. It's not going to break the bank, but it might just allow places to, even psychologically, get a bit of a lift and get people outside again. So, I mean, that would be my main point.
And are you confident you can do outdoor dining safely now and everything? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, we have a little bench outside that people sit on. I mean, it's fixed to the wall, so I can't remove it. But the difficulty at the moment with whether or not you can put seats outside, like, it's a very grey area, because some of the fast food giants like McDonald's or Supermax have fixed seating outside, like in the sense that they've always been there. So people can get a takeaway and sit down there. Like, that's technically not outside dining. And so now I would say, I wouldn't say 50%, but I'd say at least 30% of restaurants around the country and cafes now have put tables and chairs outside. And a lot of people get back to me on Twitter and say, whether it was Cork or Mallow or Donegal, that they just said, you know what, I'm just going to put them out now because there's too much of a discrepancy between whether or not it's been policed or whether or not it qualifies as outside dining. And I couldn't get a clear answer from the local Garda station whether or not someone eating a takeaway on a bench outside was outside dining, because technically speaking, they're just sitting outside. So to be honest, I feel like just sticking two tables and chairs outside now and wait for the guards to call around and say, look, I mean, it can't be two rules. I can't be Supermax around the corner with three or four tables outside, which were in full flow last night. But people are just sitting down eating takeaways. So I really think the government need to rapidly accelerate. Like, I'm not asking for indoor dining, but I just think that if there's nowhere to go, the weather's going to be good. I mean, they expect hundreds of people to gather on a beach, and the off licenses are just, I suppose, creaming it in this respect. And I mean, it's not creating a balance, I think, in cities or communities.
What is the reaction around Galway to the scenes in Salt Hill yesterday? Do people in some way understand why those kids might have been there?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's 50-50. I don't think anyone is like disgusted in that sense. I think people are annoyed. But I suppose if there's nowhere else to go and it's really, really great weather, like, people are going to congregate on the beach. And we saw scenes like that in England last year as well. So I think we need a more holistic approach now. Like, it can't just be where we're going to open the hairdressers and the retail, because the weather is going to be good. And each weekend, people are going to want to do something. And I understand their policy of gradual reopening, but if they go ahead with opening the hotels mid-June and not open the restaurants, then people travelling across the country going to hotels, where are they going to go? I mean, they're going to go to places with picnic benches and beaches, and you're going to get gatherings there. So,
and do you think those kids, are they not going to be on the beach anyway? Like, they're not going to be up in the air anyway, are they?
No, but I don't like the volume of people. I mean, certainly, I think some of them would probably be around town if there were beer gardens. But I think if there was outside spaces, and whether these are plenty of beer gardens, I think it would just spread the people around more. That's all, because there's literally nowhere else to go. So of course you're going to go to the off license and then go to the beach. So I think if there was a few places, and also the beer gardens that will be regulated. So I mean, people will be sitting socially distanced, and even if people had a few drinks and the social distancing broke down a small bit, it's certainly not going to be like the video with hundreds of people. It was like a Benidorm, as someone said. It was literally like you just put a DJ there and you'd have a Benidorm or a Ibiza. And so hopefully the government respond to these in a progressive way, and not like just let's just ignore it for another 4 weeks.
Okay, that was JP McMahon there. Of course, yeah, Ireland in many ways, parts of it, Benidorm without the sun. That's listen, Eddie, there's another guy feeling like a mug. And you're dealing with a lot of retailers, business people. I'm sure a lot of them are feeling like mugs at this stage, are they?
Yeah, well, he's making a very good point there. Nobody was proactive in managing and foreseeing that circumstance.
Well, no, in fairness now, we should say that the guards did come and break it up at a particular point. The guards
I'm not blaming the Gardaí, but I'm just saying generally that, you know, it's no surprise that young people will congregate in fine weather on a beach. Were we prepared for that? No, we weren't. We were reactive rather than proactive.
Yeah.
And I think that's also an issue. Look, we're living with COVID and we have to accept that. And there is an uncertainty around it. But we're also in this theatre of numbers day in, day out. And then we're told, no, well, those numbers don't apply to yesterday. They actually apply to last January. So people see this inconsistency, and consistency is the basis of trust. So they don't trust what they're being told. But this morning, we've heard a very simple, straightforward explanation of why you should wear your mask, and that COVID is more likely to be picked up in an airborne situation. So those simple explanations, it's all...
Yeah, which we did have, I think, at a particular stage.
But we've forgotten. Now it's got lost in, follow the science, but no one's explaining the science. And you know, David Spiegelhalter, who's one of the UK's eminent statisticians, was talking about this last week. And he was saying, you know, the simple way to explain to people is to say, look at how we didn't have the flu epidemic to the same extent this autumn winter. Why? Because we were washing our hands and keeping our distance. And if it's explained to people, as Colin McCarthy says, if you're not explaining it properly, then you're losing. If it's explained to people, people will react in a positive way.
Yeah. Grandinier, do you think JP made a point there, like if there were beer gardens, a lot of those young people would presumably have been there. So it looks at the moment as if the choice is that every park in the country is a beer garden, or we open up some beer gardens. That's kind of where we're at now, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's a really good point about, you know, of course people are going to congregate on the beach. You know, when people were giving out about all types of people ordering takeaway pints, like, of course they will, because what else would they be doing on a sunny day? Everything's closed. They can't go on holidays. They can't go across counties. You know, if you tell people you can't do anything because we want the virus to spread, of course they're going to go down the road to the one thing they can do and do that. So that, you know, that's the kind of context that we're in here. I think if beer gardens were open and there was a certain setting, like, you know, you had a table of however many people and they were spaced out from other tables, that is a controlled setting that you can kind of regulate people a bit. And you will get outbreaks because that's just, you know, you do something so many times across the country, you are going to get outbreaks. But that is more regulated than, say, the back garden situation, where people kind of make up their own rules about what is safe. And some people will do that perfectly. And other people, you know, particularly where drink is involved, will kind of rules can fall by the wayside. And we do things that we wouldn't normally do when sober. So the beer garden thing probably is a good idea. I don't know if we have a lot of them in Ireland because the weather's so changeable, not even just bad, it's just so unpredictable. But, you know, local councils are offering businesses to do up an outside area for this summer. And I've seen some of that work in kind of local areas around Dublin as well. So that is kind of a great thing. I know there's been a couple of local, you know, cities around Ireland that have opened kind of pedestrianised areas, which is good, not just for the pandemic, but after it as well. And I think people really like them. So
yeah,
I'm hopeful
some
that
people
that
really
will...
like them. Not everyone agrees. No. Yeah, there's a texter here agreeing with you on the garden. The issue with the garden is the bottles of wine. Once drunk, the good intentions and behaviour will fail. But listen to this. This is an excellent text. I will not be treated like a moron. I absolutely will have small numbers of family and friends to my garden. Okay, I'm not endorsing that one way or another. This is not a police state. But listen to this. Expecting women to meet in parks and public outdoor spaces only ignores that women and children need toilets. We can't pee in a bush. Women are entitled to private outdoor spaces to breastfeed. Babies need to be changed and so on. Rules made for men, by men, for men, don't work for the other half of the population. You're nodding vigorously, Cliona.
Absolutely. I belong to that gender myself, and I know the challenges. I have two boys, so it's great they can pee anywhere, but I'm much more constrained. And I breastfed both my boys, and there's a huge lack of benches to sit down and breastfeed. Like, I used to drop my older fella to school when my younger fella was a baby, and there was no bench outside the school. And there's loads of breastfeeding mams in that school. Yeah. So just simple things. And it actually comes back to the Citizens Assembly, which I thought was so brilliant. And again, shows if you trust the common sense of Irish people, or probably people from everywhere, but let's just take the credit for being the most sensible nation in the world. If you trust people and give them the science and give them the facts and trust them to come up with a solution, they actually do a really good job. So I think things like getting more women onto various decision-making bodies, they'll be thinking about where are the toilets and where are you going to change the baby and where are you going to sit down to breastfeed, because breastfeeding while walking is very challenging.
But Gráinne, I think I'm not wrong, am I, when I say that NPHET is 50-50 men and women, isn't it?
There are female representatives, definitely. I think that is more of a local authority government kind of thing about bathrooms being open, because I know Dublin City Council announced this week that they are going to open public buildings so people can use the bathroom.
Yeah.
So we're getting to a point where that is, I mean, we're at a point now that we can open those things safely as well because cases are so low.
Yeah. Cliona, I want to ask you about vaccines, because it's obviously on people's minds this weekend and we're waiting in anticipation for next week. So let's just pause for a minute and get your thoughts. Now, there's an email here. I'm a 62-year-old who's getting their vaccine next week. It's a disgrace that it'll be the end of August, roughly, like go out and about or mix with anyone. My friends who are of similar age haven't met anyone since last September. Is it fair we have to sit at home and wait? I'm also making the point that people in their 60s have not led a very sociable life since the beginning. We now have to watch others having fun. And like, the NPHET have always said, you know, the vaccine bonus will be for the people who initially, for the people who have suffered most in this pandemic and lost most in this pandemic, and that's why it would be fair that some people get the vaccine bonus before others. It does now look as if the over 60s could be hanging around a long time to get their vaccine bonus, doesn't it?
I presume that person is referring
is
to
getting
fully
to AstraZeneca.
Vaccinated.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Because so, presumably that person is thinking, if they're half vaxxed, that they're not able to enjoy the vaccine bonus until is it now up to 16 weeks at the moment, the gap
sure.
of AstraZeneca?
Who knows? It changes every day as the data is coming out. That's a really difficult one. And I think actually that's a really good point that person is making, because they're going to get a huge reduction in risk even from that first dose of AstraZeneca. So, you know, if you're getting Pfizer, my mum and dad got Pfizer. I was like, no, don't meet anyone. Hold off until you've had your second dose and wait 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's only a question of 4 more weeks of enduring it. But if you're talking about 16 weeks or longer, maybe then you do need to look at the risks and benefits and think, OK, are we going to say that if you've had your first dose of AstraZeneca, you've waited 2 to 3 weeks for your antibodies to kick in, you're whatever, 70% protected, and the other person that you're meeting is also vaccinated, so much less likely to pass it to you. Is that something that's safe enough? And again, that's probably something that we need to inform people about and let them make their own decisions.
Yeah.
So it's not unreasonable at all.
I think Stephen Donnelly was asked about that this week, and he's, you know, because the space between the first and second dose of AstraZeneca is greater than for the mRNA vaccines. And he was asked how that's unfair to people who, you know, 60 to 69 who will be getting AstraZeneca and will have to wait longer. And he said that is a valid point, because as you, like, you have to wait longer before you can meet another vaccinated person indoors and that. So he did accept that there is an unfairness there. I don't know if that means
had he not thought about this until he was asked?
I can't speak for him, okay, but he didn't have an answer, as I'll say.
Yeah, yeah, okay, we'll leave that as is. Just quickly then, Cliona, Johnson & Johnson, would you expect to see that put into use next week?
I think so. I mean, again, it's so difficult. And, you know, again, it's coming back to who makes what decisions for whom, on what risk. You know, do you trust people to assess their own, make their own risk benefit assessments? Does the government do that? But yeah, I mean, I think that we know that the side effects from Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca are extremely rare. And you're weighing the risk of getting those side effects up against the other risks. So I think we can expect to see Johnson & Johnson potentially coming into use next week. The fact that it's once off, I know you were talking to my friend Austin yesterday about vaccinating the homeless community.
Yeah.
So I'm involved in that as well. And like, that's a community for where having just one dose of a vaccine is a big plus.
Of course.
So you'd probably weigh it up and go, okay, right, well, for those people, that makes sense, that particular decision.
Yeah, yeah, they're certainly under, and poor old Nayak are under enough pressure anyway
to come up with the right answer.
Everyone's made it quite clear what they're expecting.
There is one answer that we want to hear.
Yeah, but I'm sure they will stick
rigidly to the evidence. Karina Butler is a woman who will not be swayed, so she will stick to the evidence.
Yeah. Eddie, have you any sniff of vaccination yet?
I've had my first shot and I'm waiting for the second one.
Okay, do you mind if I ask? Was it AstraZeneca or?
No, it was Pfizer.
Okay, yeah, so you're quietly smug there in the corner. not that there is anything wrong with take whatever you're offered. Cliona, just before we go to a break, there's a flip side to all this. We're looking at a very, you know, we're looking forward now and thinking things that can only get better, et cetera, et cetera. We're over it, we're out of it, and, you know, vaccinations will kick in soon enough and it'll all be fine. And then we look at India, who were over it as well 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, and it's absolutely heartbreaking. Like, I can't bring myself to watch
They're very distressing scenes, aren't they?
Oh, Jesus. Like, I couldn't watch it,
yeah.
You know? That was our worst nightmare. My own personal worst nightmare was running out of oxygen for the patients that I have to look after, you know, and just not having enough to give. It's awful. And I think we really, really, really need to take the advice of the experts, which is very clear, and do everything we can to get as many people in the world vaccinated as quickly as possible, because it's the right thing to do. And it's also the safest thing for us here. So we need to waive the intellectual property. We need to support India in terms of their raw materials. And, you know, that needs to be a major, major priority for the next year.
No, India is making
millions. But you know what Biden had put? So Donald Trump, I was reading in preparation for this. So the US had put an embargo on, you're not allowed to send the raw materials that they need for the vaccine. You're only allowed to use them to make vaccine for the US. And Joe Biden, who otherwise I think is fantastic, has continued this. So he has said, not until we have all of America vaccinated are we willing to give you raw material. Yeah. What kind of a message is that sending?
Yeah, if Donald Trump did that, we'd be up in
Well,
arms.
I would have expected it from him.
I saw an Indian man talking about, I think he had family members who were sick last night, and he said, have you ever seen somebody who needs oxygen? He said, they die like a fish out of water.
Oh, it's horrendous. It's just unbearable.
Okay, look, we'll take a break. Eddie Shanahan, Professor Cliona Ní Chealaigh and Gráinne Nié staying with us.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1. Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. Our panel still with us. Eddie Shanahan, who's a fashion retail consultant. Professor Cliona Ní Chealaigh, who's a consultant in infectious diseases. And Gráinne Nié from the journal.ie. Eddie, we've talked a lot about hospitality. But of course, the other elephant in the room, if you will, is retail. And that is your area, your specialist area. So give us an idea of what the issues are there right now as you see them and what needs to happen maybe.
Well, I suppose what's annoying some retailers at the moment is the fact that retail has been open throughout this, supermarkets, pharmacies and so on. And it's been very well managed. And people are wondering, you know, why us? Why can we not even do click and collect? And they're now facing a series of really serious challenges because there is no definitive date as to when they're going to be allowed to reopen. And to prepare for retail is not like flicking an electric switch. It means that you've got to get your stock back in, you've got to get your staff back in, you've got to prepare your store, and it, that's a difficult challenge at the moment because all across the world, supply chains have been broken.
Yeah.
And if you want evidence
so
of that...
So are people, for example, are people looking to have 2021 spring summer stock in now, or did that ever come, or what's the story?
Well, there are probably two answers to that. Some stores have enough clout with their suppliers to have been able to cancel that and maybe have done so. Others had already placed their orders. Some even had deliveries coming in because, you know, it's a good idea to get your stock in very early and, you know, to be ready in January rather than March for spring. So some people have stock and it's rapidly going out of date. Other yeah. people have no stock and have no prospect of getting it. And if you
and
want evidence
Eddie,
of that...
Most
just
of their working capital is tied up in this stock, is it?
In most cases, yeah. Particularly wow. in times of hardship like this, suppliers will be invoicing on a pro forma basis or looking for deposits and balances before deliveries are made. But then you also, if you look at websites at the moment, you'll see the remainders of last year's stock, broken sizes and so on. Some people have been able to do online trading because they are set up in such a way that they can afford to do their own deliveries. Others can't. The ones who have been trading online here in Ireland have been doing reasonably well. But that has a cost to it because you have to have somebody to deliver. And again, there's a strange regulation here. I'm allowed as a retailer to drive around to 30 people and deliver, but the 30 people are not allowed to come individually to a hatch at the back of my store and collect. Mm. You know, so that rules a lot of people out. There are changes coming down the tracks in retail as well. One of the benefits of the pandemic has been that Irish retailers have suddenly cottoned on to the fact that it's a multi-channel operation yeah. now. They need it to be online. You have 80% of consumers saying their shopping journey starts online, on the couch in the evening. Now, that doesn't mean that everything is going to be purchased online because the consumer is now the point of sale. We all carry a shopping centre in our pockets, on our phones. And the point of purchase is the point of best experience. And this is another challenge for retailers, reopening and recreating an experience, particularly for those that really have had to convert their shop almost into a wholesale warehouse for yeah. the last couple of months, you know. So it is going to be very, very challenging for them.
Is everyone going to survive?
No. And that's another big, big issue. You know, we still had a legacy from the boom years where this country was overshopped. And now I think the accountants will be calling the final call on that, because I'm sure a lot of people are just finishing their year end figures and looking at how dismal they are. And I don't think they will have an appetite to continue. So I think you will see a lot more casualties. You had a lot of people blame the pandemic. Some of the big names who went bust over the last couple of months, they were gone before the pandemic ever struck.
Yeah, okay.
Now we're going to have the pandemic casualties coming after.
Okay, so we're actually Conor Skeen has an interesting piece today. You know, the way he's kind of good at big picture thinking and a bit of futurology and stuff. And he you know, he writes a lot about the high street's going to have to change and everything. He's talking today about all changes bring, mentioning online shopping and stuff. But I suppose there is an issue there that people have moved online much more. So it's probably pressed a 5-year fast forward on the move online, hasn't it? So we're looking at are we looking at very different towns and cities after all
well,
this is over?
The high street has definitely relocated because there are going to be two types of shops in the future. The iconic shop where you go for that special three-dimensional retail experience. And then the hyper-local movement of consumers as a okay. result of the pandemic to support local makers in local shops and thereby support their local communities. But you also have some other changes coming down the tracks. And that is that there will be quite a reduction in the choice that retailers will have to buy. Many of the big brands realise now that they would be better off controlling their brand destinies themselves. So they're setting up their own shops or they're opening shops on concession basis within stores. So basically they rent space and they pick where they will rent that space. And that in turn too reduces the supply. So I think retailers are really facing a very difficult time, uncertainty.
And listen, so the suggestion seems to be at the moment that they're possibly click and collect early in the month of May, and then as May goes on, a more general opening up for retail. Would you be happy with that?
Well, I've heard a rumour that around mid-May, but then didn't we all hear so many rumours? I think the sooner the better. I think the sooner that the government can give that certainty, this is the date we're reopening retail in whatever format they're going to reopen it, then people can prepare.
Yeah, and I think we get, in fairness to the government, we get that next week. And cleaner retail is a safe space as far as you're concerned?
Yeah, I mean, masks, ventilation, hand sanitizer. But yeah, I think it's, you know, you go in, you do your shopping and you go out again. You don't have to take off your mask. So I don't think it's an unreasonable thing to think about reopening.
Yeah, okay. No, listen, there's great, well, for us, it's kind of probably harmless enough entertainment, but it's existential political stuff over in the UK. All the front pages today, number 10 fears Cummings bombshell dossier is the headline in the Telegraph. And be interesting to see. I think the general view is that Dominic Cummings, that Boris Johnson has poked a hornet's nest here, and that Dominic Cummings is gone to war on his old boss. Darren McCaffrey, political editor of GB News, is on the line. Darren, welcome. Are you there?
I am indeed.
Hi, Darren. Darren, could you give us a brief rundown of developments so far in Johnson versus Cummings in the last few days?
Yeah, it's almost where do you start with all of this? But yeah, you're right. In recent days, I mean, essentially when Dominic Cummings released that blog on Friday, he kind of made two big key allegations. One of them was around who has funded the Downing Street flat, Boris Johnson. It seems that the insistence of his fiancée has massively renovated his own flat above Downing Street at the cost of tens of thousands of pounds. Now, there are lots of allegations that it's actually funded from political donors. Now, Boris Johnson has subsequently paid for it out of his own pocket, but where did the original money come from? Because that's not been properly declared so far. That's potentially very, very difficult for Boris Johnson because, as Dominic Cummings suggested, it may well be illegal or indeed unethical. And then there's this whole other issue about who potentially leaked details of a second lockdown back in November. There's already an official investigation into that. Dominic Cummings making clear it was not him,
Started because there was a leak from Downing Street suggesting that Dominic Cummings was the chatty rat. He was accused of a few leaks, wasn't he? But that was the central one.
Yeah, indeed. And there's this kind of idea that actually Boris Johnson wanted to keep things open. Dominic Cummings wanted to close things down. But in the end, what's happened is that because of other leaks that had happened early in the week, most notably about who was texting Boris Johnson on his phone, i.e. Lord Dyson, that Boris Johnson wanted this to stop and he was going to claim that it was Dominic Cummings who's behind the initial leaks. And that is why he went to war with him on Friday. But the big problem for Boris Johnson is Dominic Cummings was his right-hand man for 16 months in government. He knows in many ways where the skeletons are. And there's a fear now in Downing Street that even on these kind of slightly side issues and the details around the Downing Street flat that most people probably won't care about, is that Dominic Cummings may well reveal far more difficult and explosive things for Boris Johnson. He's due to appear before MPs in Westminster next month, and the Sunday Times reporting today that actually he could reveal details about when the UK locked down, about whether decisions Boris Johnson made potentially led to the deaths of thousands of people because he took too long in locking down England when those decisions were made. So it's going to get really difficult. It's a psychodrama that this government could do without, but it's one that really, really could damage Boris Johnson's premiership. But I must add this, Brendan, that, you know, do you remember when Donald Trump said that he could go on Fifth Avenue and shoot lots of people and that people would still vote for him? Like, you know, Boris Johnson's personal opinion poll ratings are still pretty high. There's an opinion poll out yesterday that showed the Conservatives have actually increased the lead over Labour to 11 points. To a certain degree, people kind of expect this from Boris Johnson. They kind of hold them to a lower standard. And so I just don't know how much this is going to stick, but the fear in Downing Street is not what's been revealed so far. It's what might be around the corner, because as someone put it, you know, Dominic Cummings will turn up to a pillow fight with nuclear weapons. And it sounds like he's got recordings, detailed emails, and he really could do an awful lot of damage to Boris Johnson's premiership.
Okay, so how's this going to pan out over the next week, Darren?
Well, so I think there will be lots more questions about this Downing Street flat definitely issue. We know that the Cabinet Secretary is appearing for MPs tomorrow. What did he know? How far have investigations gone? What was not declared? And then in the coming weeks, clearly there'll be a lot of focus on where Dominic Cummins kind of goes next with all of this, Brendan. In the end, what I'm trying to say is this story isn't going away. And while people at the moment might be willing to forgive Boris Johnson and the kind of slogans of Tory sleaze aren't really sticking as well as the Labour opposition would like, at some point, if this continues to dominate the news agenda,
okay,
and there's local elections here on the 6th of May, you know what? I think that will start to stick. By the sheer kind of presence of it being constantly in the headlines.
Okay, Darren McCaffrey, thank you very much. We'll take a break.
Text 51551. Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1. Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. Our panel still with us, Eddie Shanahan, Professor Cliona Ní Chealaigh and Gráinne Ní Eé. I just want to hark back before we move on, because there's a very good email here, and it's the perspective of a 24-year-old, which we haven't had today on the show. Thomas says, as a 24-year-old, the simple fact is this. Now that our own grandparents and vulnerable relatives have been vaccinated, it's very hard to resist the urge to just meet people again. This is now happening every weekend among my age group, both inside and outside. It is definitely selfish, but also human nature. Once the immediate risk has been removed from those close to you, it's hard not to want to return to some kind of normal and fun life. And Thomas, I think we can all take your point on that one. Believe it or not, we were all of us here were 24 once and younger too. Cliona, you mentioned earlier the Citizens Assembly and the recommendations yesterday, and like quite seismic stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah, they didn't pull their punches, and I think one of the brilliant things about it was, you know, that the chair said to them, OK, these things are going to have cost implications. They're going to have tax implications. Are you willing to pay? And they said yes. And I suppose, you know, there were a lot of things in there that I would have been hoping to see happen. And I just thought it was brilliant.
Yeah. And a lot of it around care.
Yeah. So really undervalued in our society. I mean, I know you have kids as well. Like the cost of childcare is huge. And my husband is Finnish. I know I've talked about it before. Yeah. They have a really good state funded childcare system. You have to have a master's degree to work in a creche. They have really low ratios. The continuing education for the people who work in the creches, the creche teachers, as they call them. Mm. And the maximum that you pay, don't cry now, no matter how many children you have, is €200 a month.
Yeah. Yeah,
And it's really important.
But people will say, well, they
pay higher taxes. But you know, it's still like for me, it would still work out cheaper.
Yeah, yeah. Gráinne, I heard the government representative on Katie Hannon yesterday kind of saying, forget who it was now from the Green Party. Anyway, saying basically the government will look at this. We will prepare a response. I think there was some talk of a committee looking at it and stuff. But we have seen in the past, haven't we, that these recommendations, people kind of go, oh, that's all a bit liberal, isn't it? And then, lo and behold, as Catherine Day was pointing out yesterday, it turns out that the population at large can kind of be in agreement. Is this going to lead to radical change in our society, do you think?
You'd hope, because it has previously, and I just love the Citizens Assembly model for coming up with ideas about where Ireland is going as a country. I was talking to an Italian MEP last week who mentioned it, about how effective it is as a programme for figuring out from citizens themselves how to take a direction, I suppose, for the country. I suppose it depends. You know, and we've seen kind of radical changes in terms of green policies and climate change policies in government. And I think the government is aware that these kind of policies do appeal on a political level to the population as well. Tax is always a tricky issue, but I think there's a lot of things they can do without going the full hog as well.
Yeah, okay. So a reasonable compromise. All right, thanks a million, Gráinne Ní Eé from the journal.ie. Thank you, Professor Cliona Ní Chealaigh from St. James's Hospital in Dublin. And thank you, Eddie Shanahan, fashion retail consultant.